This is the Senate Committee on Commerce. Today is Wednesday, March 7th, 2007, 3 o'clock p.m., Hearing Room B, and the chair is Senator Przanski.
Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Committee on Commerce to order. Today we have a number of bills that are set for public hearing and possible work session. First, what we're going to do is have some bills that we had carried over from Monday heard first, since we unfortunately were not able to complete our work, and I believe these are all bills that came from the Employment Department. And so I got Dave Jones down, and I'm not sure, Dave, are you going to have anyone else with you? Not that you need it, but if you do, please come on up. And Anna, why don't you be so kind to introduce, and I'll go ahead and open a public hearing on 2207.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2207 increases the wage threshold for an employer to become subject to unemployment insurance tax from $225 to $1,000 per quarter. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal impact statement that has been issued, and it was attached to your staff report. It passed unanimously in the House Business and Labor Committee and passed on the House floor with 56 votes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Only 56?
Only 56.
Boy,
four
could
people
be,
there.
Be in trouble over here. If only
there was no votes.
Oh, no votes. Okay. All right. Dave?
Yeah. Actually, Mr. Chair, Rob Edwards from the Employment Department, 2207 is actually going to be mine.
I'm sorry. I was looking looking at another bill that's coming, which Dave's going to do. So, Rob, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Edwards. I'm the UI tax manager for the Employment Department, and I will be brief on House Bill 2207. In its most simple terms, it's going to increase the threshold of the amount of wages subject to unemployment insurance tax, thus reducing the tax burden on the smallest employers in the state. The current taxable wage threshold is 35 years old, and at that point in time, someone working for minimum wage would have had to work 180 hours before that employer would have been subject. Under the current minimum wage, they only need to work 28 hours. So if we pass this increase in the threshold, it'll be up to 128 hours. We picked $1,000 per quarter because that will match the current threshold for domestic employers under the law. The revenue impact on the UI trust fund is very small, only about $35,000 a year. And we also believe the impact on UI claimants will be very small. In 2005, there were only 87 claims out of 175,000 filed that would have been reduced if this bill had been in place, and only three claims would have been eliminated completely. The bill does not affect the, as I mentioned, the $1,000 threshold for domestic workers, and it also will not affect the threshold for agricultural workers. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Panel, any questions on this first bill, 2207? If not,
good bill should pass.
Yeah, it sounds like with a almost unanimous vote over in the House, both on the committee and on the floor. So if not, then I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2207.
Motion?
Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2207 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe moves House Bill 2207 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we need a carry on that one. Senator Monroe, will you be so kind?
I'll be happy to carry it.
And closing the work session on 2207, we'll go ahead and open a public hearing on 2248. Ms. Barron?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2248 repeals unemployment tax law requiring conformance with the federal tax law for single-owner businesses that are disregarded for federal tax purposes. There's no revenue impact on this bill or fiscal impact. It passed the House Business and Labor Committee unanimously, and that floor vote was 5802. There is a small correction to be made in your SMS where it says there's some single-owner businesses or limited liability companies. I should have crossed out that limited liability partnership because that's not single ownership, so please cross that out. That will be fixed on your final SMS.
Okay. So it's the LLP that's going to be...
LLPs, yeah. When I'm talking about single-owner businesses, I should not have been talking about partnerships.
Okay.
That's not just one.
I understand. Okay, thank you. And Dave Jones.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dave Jones. I'm tax manager for the Employment Department, Central Operations. And I'm here to talk about House Bill 2248. Originally, this was an attempt to parallel IRS code for an... to simplify the reporting process. However, once we implemented the law, we found out that there were some unintended consequences as far as how this pertains to other revised statutes that govern LLCs within the state of Oregon. To not recognize the entity creates a conflict and potentially eliminates the benefits that the employers under the LLC statutes would have received. And so by adopting this measure, it would eliminate the conflict, and we would go back to the way we did business prior to 2005 when we initially did this. There's no fiscal impact. Can I answer any questions?
Are there any questions for Mr. Jones? Not seeing any, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2248, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2248. And can the...
Move 2248 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Avakian has moved House Bill 2248 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Avakian, would you be so kind to carry this one?
Be pleased to.
And so we'll go ahead and close the work session on 2248. And then we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2249. And Ms. Barana, again, can you give us the overview?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2249 clarifies the statute under which a person may apply for a hearing regarding the assessment of civil penalty by the director of the Employment Department for a violation concerning the transfer or acquisition of a trade or business. It has no revenue impact. It has no fiscal impact. I enclosed the SMS from the 2005 session because we did pass this bill, and this is a technical correction to the bill. And it passed the House Business and Labor Committee unanimously and passed the House floor with 54 votes, 6 people absent. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Dave Jones.
Yes. Actually, this was a bill, again, that was enacted in the last legislature, and what happened was there was a specific cross-reference that was missed in one portion of the law, and the mistake was not found until the Assistant Attorney General reviewed it when it was an enrolled bill, and it was thought it was best to bring it forward at this session to correct that, and it's purely a housekeeping type situation. And so, again, there's no fiscal impact. Any questions?
Any questions on the housekeeping? Closing the public hearing on House Bill 2249. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2249. And is there a motion?
Your turn. I believe it's Senator Gordley's turn. Every time we say something, we're carrying a bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2249 to the Senate floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2249 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Gordley, it sounds like maybe you'll be so kind of carry this one. And we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2249. And now I think that takes care of our employment bills from the department. And we'll move into another set of bills that we have that are from the PERS, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And let's see what order we have. All right, so we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2281. And Ms. Braun, if you'll give us the overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2281 provides that a member who wishes to withdraw, not retire from any one public employee retirement system program must withdraw from all the PERS programs at the same time. There's no revenue impact, and there's no fiscal impact on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any question? I guess we can ask questions before we know what you're going to say, Mr. Laney's, but I guess it would only be fair to let you inform us before we ask any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of the Oregon Public Employees Retirement System. Just some quick background on the four bills you have today. These are being presented by the PERS board itself. The board's directive to us this past year was to find ways to simplify the plan. There was an advisory committee created after reform in 03 that advises the board on these types of issues. It's made up of 7 employer representatives and 7 labor representatives. All 4 of these bills were approved by that committee and forwarded on to the board with a recommendation to proceed. So with that background, 2281 in particular deals with withdrawals. We just want to make it clear that when a person chooses to voluntarily withdraw, we're not talking retirement, but we're talking withdrawal or refund of their account, that if they choose to do so, they withdraw all their accounts within PERS. Your PERS has now a number of different programs, and it can be quite confusing to us if they choose to withdraw only 1 or 2 of their accounts and leave others there, and they were later to return. What kind of membership do we have? This will simplify that administration for us.
Either you're in or either you're out?
Correct.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Delaney? Not seeing any, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2281, open a work session on House Bill 2281, and I assure whoever makes this motion will not carry the bill.
Oh, good, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
I would move House Bill 2281 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe moves House Bill 2281 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objection? So ordered, and the chair will carry this one, since it's my turn. And we'll close the work session on 2281, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2282. And Ms. Braun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2282 changes the statutory term notice of contest to notice of dispute for challenges to the calculations of the public employment retirement system, allowances, or benefits. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Delaney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, very minor housekeeping bill here in that statute tells members who are challenging the calculations used in their benefit that their only statutory recourse after having worked with PERS is to go to the circuit court. But the title in statute is note of contest. People think they now have the right to a contested contest through the administrative act, and they don't, and it takes a lot of communication between PERS and the member to straighten that out. Changing the title may, we hope, remove some of that confusion and state it's notice of dispute.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Delaney? Not seeing any, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2282. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2282. And again, I assure whoever makes the motion will not be carrying this bill.
Move 20.
So different.
I move House Bill 2282 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley moves House Bill 2282 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
No, I'm just beating you to the punch on carrying the bill. I want it.
He wants it.
You want this one?
Please.
Okay, well, first of all, let's get to that point, and that was going to be, is there any discussion? Not sending any objection. So ordered. Now, I will tell you, the prerogative for the chair, I was actually thinking this was a great government efficiency bill that I think that our missing
certainly
member...
Certainly wouldn't want me carrying it.
I was thinking our Senator Beyer may want this one, but if Senator Bakken wants this, we have a couple more that we could...
I'll take the next one.
All right.
No contest.
So Senator Beyer will be the carrier of this one, since it's a government efficiency bill.
Nicely done, Mr. Chair.
And so we'll close the public hearing, or the work session on 2282. And that will lead us to opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2285. Ms. Braun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2285 prohibits reemployment for the first 6 months following retirement of a member who elects the total lump sum retirement benefit option. There's no revenue impact or fiscal impact with this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Delaney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, statute currently directs the person taking a total lump sum option, where you take both your member and employer dollars and leave the system, cannot return within 6 months. There's a caveat, a loophole, however, that has caused some confusion. That loophole is that an employer could declare the person a casual, seasonal, or an emergency and bring them back on immediately. It really comes down to who knows about this loophole to be able to use it. And so to make it a clean break, we're proposing to close that loophole. It was, again, approved by the advisory committee. One clarification, this came up during the House vote. There was some confusion on this. This is not all reemployed retirees. We have many options for members drawing a benefit to return as a reemployed retiree. This is addressing only a very minor segment of individuals. Those that take this particular option, the total lump sum option, would have to wait the 6 months before returning.
All right. I guess I'm going to ask a question on that. Why are we going to distinguish against this segment or a portion of the retirees based on what I'm assuming is that they have chosen the total lump sum retirement benefit option as compared to some other option?
Mr. Chair, it's because statute specifically speaks to this particular option. And so, again, just trying to make it a cleaner break for PERS. Statute doesn't provide that same break for individuals that continue to receive a monthly benefit from PERS. It only, that particular issue of needing to be gone 6 months applies only by statute to those who withdraw from the system completely. So as to make it very clear that there actually has been a withdrawal from the system.
Okay, fine. Any other questions?
Yes.
Senator Gordley.
But the effect of the measure is that one would be prohibited from reemployment for a period of time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, that is correct. For that six-month period, immediately following your retirement, you would not be able to be reemployed by employer participating in PERS.
Mm-hmm. How often has this occurred?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley,
I don't have current stats on this. It's not a common option. It can run between 1 to 10% of our members, depending upon the year and depending upon what the market is doing in a given period of time. And when I say members, those members choosing to retire in a given period.
The board that looked at the issue, did they have any discussion at all about the discriminatory? Was there concern about discriminating against a category of previous employees, or just discrimination in general?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gourley, no, because again, this is a excuse me, this is a statutory provision, so the member would only be taking this provision if they were would they be informed by PERS of the background of this. You'd be saying, here are your options, total lump sum has this particular impact. We're just trying to make sure that it was a clean break. We did actually look, what the committee did look at, Senator, was going the other way. What if we just said, don't worry about it, a person taking in total lump sum can return to work the next day, and both the employer and labor folks said no, let's make it a clean break. If they're choosing to leave the system, let's make it a 6-month break before they return.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Avakian.
Does the definition of employment include somebody coming back on a temporary contract basis?
Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, it's not, that also isn't always a simple answer. It depends upon whether it's a truly independent contract, no. Because if you're an independent contractor, you're not covered by PERS. My caveat is that sometimes there's a question as to whether it's truly an independent contractor situation or if the person actually is an employee upon return. Sometimes we get into those scenarios. If it's truly an independent contractor, no, it would not be impacted.
Do you know off the top of your head whether a substitute public school teacher is an independent contractor or a PERS employee?
Senator Avakian, substitute school teachers are covered by PERS, so they are part of the PERS system if they're working the 600 hours or more.
Let's walk through that one more. If they're working how many hours?
600 hours per year is qualifying for PERS.
Okay. So, Senator Monroe.
Yeah, Steve, it's fairly common practice for school administrators and other school personnel when they reach retirement age to retire effective the 1st of January and then to work the rest of the school year because they're allowed to work 1,020 hours or something like that. How would they be affected by this law?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, if the individual is choosing a monthly benefit, they would not be impacted by this law.
Yeah.
If they chose to take a total lump sum option, then they would be precluded from returning to that employment as an employee for the 6-month period. Now,
okay.
Again, you would have the possible issue that Senator Avakian raised of an independent contractor situation that would not be impacted by this.
Okay.
One more, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm going to follow up too. Go ahead.
Could you talk a little bit about what the intent behind this is, the 6-month break?
Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, there's a federal concern with regard to qualified plans to ensure that when a person's about to draw a retirement benefit, that they truly have separated from the system. So the PERS statute states a person must be gone 6 months in order to demonstrate that. That's part of our conforming to federal statute. Now, PERS statute also allows a number of exceptions to that 6-month period. For instance, the 1,039-hour rule is an approved exception under federal statute. We have, as you may have seen in past legislation, a growing list of people that can even exceed the 1039 hours. That also is approved by the federal government if the person under certain situations is taking a full benefit, not a reduced benefit. But the basic standard of the 6-month break was to demonstrate for qualification purposes that the person has truly retired.
I guess I want to follow up on that too, Steve. It seems to me that we already have limitations for an individual that can only do 1,039 hours in a calendar year. If an individual, and I think the example that both Senator Avakian and Senator Monroe has hit on in the school setting, either on the management side or in the teacher side, seems like we may be losing the possibility of having qualified individuals to continue in that limit duration type of position. Either I can understand where someone may, for tax purposes, feel that by retiring at the end of a calendar year, that which is prior to the end of a school year, And I also can see where someone retires at the end of the school year, but 3 months later there's been that break from the summer holiday, and then they are asked or they want to maybe pick up and do some substitute teaching, that we may be limiting our resources and qualified individuals to fill those positions. So I guess the question with that kind of background, is there any risk for us to have a carve-out exception for that type of employment situation as it pertains to regulations or statutes or whatever it may be on the federal side?
Mr. Chair, I understand where you're coming from. My one caveat is, again, the PERS Board's goal in this was to make the plan simpler. They're trying to find ways to avoid a series of options and try to, because it's been difficult for members, even when we create many options, for them to understand the various options available to them, and it leads to a lot of confusion, which is we've indicated in our testimony. Could we do that? Yes, we statute could provide for that. Again, I guess my caveat would be that would start to run counter to the board's goal of trying to achieve simplicity to the plan.
Okay. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to take this one under advisement and let the committee think about this based on the questions that have been asked. So we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2285. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2286. And Ms. Braun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2286 allows public employees' deferred compensation plan payments after a divorce order to a spouse, former spouse, child, or dependent of a member to begin earlier than the date of the the employee would be eligible to receive the payments. It modifies tax reporting requirements. There is a revenue statement issued. It has minimal revenue, and there's no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Delaney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is for the Oregon Savings Growth Plan, which is our deferred comp plan to the side. It's not actually part of the PERS plan, but is overseen by the PERS board. And this simply helps us conform to federal statute. It allows us greater latitude with regard to alternate payees, to allow that alternate payee to draw their monies out, not tied to whatever the member may be doing, which is now allowed by federal law. It also clarifies for tax reporting purposes who is to get the actual documentation indicating what benefits have been paid out.
Great, thank you. Questions? There's no questions. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2286. Open a work session on House Bill 2286. Senator Avakian.
Move 2286 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Avakian moves House Bill 2286 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Will be so ordered. Chair will be kind enough to carry this one. And thank you for the motion, Senator Avakian. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2286. And Ms. Ron, what else do we have for today?
That is it. Except I want to remind everyone that we're going to Eugene on Friday.
Yay. And Monroe's driving.
Senator Monroe's driving.
Senator Gordley's keeping me company.
Please meet.
Okay, thank you.
Meet those of you that are going with me. Meet me at my office at 10:30 on Friday morning.
Got it.
And the vehicle is downstairs, and we'll go down there and have a nice little trip.
Right after Ways and Means. Good.
Right after Ways and Means.
Make sure you eat before.
Oh, yeah. They have food in the house lounge.
Okay.
Big breakfast on Friday morning.
Eat on the way.
All right. With that, thank you very much. We'll be adjourning for the committee till today.
Thank you for
today. And we'll see everyone in Eugene on Friday. Thank you.
Thank you.